where she followed Levi through another hallway lined with portraits of miser monarchs with amethyst eyes.
"You should address Bianca as madam," he said,
more like a warning than a suggestion.
"She likes that."
"I'm more than comfortable addressing superiors." Her voice sounded steady and precise. The streets might have been Levi's arena, but etiquette was hers. After everything she'd faced so far this day, an interview with Bianca Augustine hardly intimidated her. N held her head up high, smoothed down her hair and focused. She repeated Lord's rules in the back of her mind. His eyes trailed over her, almost enough to ruin that focus.
"I take it you didn't like my choice of dress for you."
"It was inappropriate, particularly for an interview."
"Maybe that's why I liked it."
He smiled, and no, she wouldn't let that smile break her resolve to be aggravated with him. She stared in the direction of her pointed toe heels, hidden underneath the hem of the dress, and hoped with every fiber of her being she wasn't giving him the satisfaction of blushing like a Bellamy schoolgirl. "Though I will admit, this dress is a bit long," she commented, trying to remain aloof.
"Yeah, you should grow some."
She couldn't think of a snappy enough retort, so, left with no other options, she let out a humph. He snorted, but then his smirk receded.
"I'm sorry, Anne. I haven't been trying to upset you. But this city, it's rotten, down to its very core, and you need to be prepared for what you might face. Or learn."
He looked away and stared at his Oxfords.
"I'm trying to help you."
He was attempting to soothe her, but his honesty made N only feel worse. Maybe she was no match for this city. Maybe the north side would take everything she had and spit her out into the harbor. Maybe the streets where lords walked freely would spell ruin for her daughter. They walked into a waiting room with several marble busts lining the walls. A pale, fragile-looking woman hunched over a desk in the corner. She startled at the sight of them.
"Levi!"
she exclaimed, standing as he approached and even giving a slight bow of her head. She had a pinched nose and a collar so tiny it was a wonder she could breathe. She drank in the sight of him, never once glancing at N.
"I wasn't aware you had an appointment."
"I don't. Is Bianca available right now?"
"Yes." She hesitated before adding, "I can announce you if you wish."
"We'll announce ourselves."
He grabbed N's wrist and tugged her to the door on the far side of the room.
"Here we go."
He knocked.
"Come in,"
a woman's voice invited. Before opening the door, Levi bent down, his lips inches from her ear.
"Whatever you do, don't let her see you squirm."
N. N and Levi stepped inside a dark office with emerald velvet curtains and matching chairs. Behind Bianca's desk hung a mural of another miser family, two parents, two daughters, and an infant on the mother's lap. The last royal family of Rains, executed 25 years ago during the revolution. Mahogany bookcases lined the side walls, filled with more vases, marble busts, and antiques than books. Amid the darkness of the room, Bianca Augustine was fair. Her white hair and ivory sallow skin made her appear ghost-like, and there was certainly something haunting about the emptiness of her gaze. Soulless. She looked to be in her 60s, and her age was exaggerated by the powdery makeup caked within the creases of her face. Despite her ornate dress and overwhelming amount of jewelry, nothing about her was elegant. She had clearly never been beautiful, and, judging from the severe frown lines and pruned wrinkles around her pursed lips, she had never been kind either.
"Levi," Bianca said.
She spoke his name slowly, as if savoring its taste.
"I wasn't expecting you."
"I owe this girl a fever. She needs work, and with all I need to juggle at the moment..."
He smiled a bit too widely.
"It would put my mind at ease knowing she gets settled."
Bianca raised her pencil-drawn eyebrows and shifted her gaze to N.
"What's your name, girl?"
"Grace," N told herself. "I am Grace and Ease."
"Arienne Abacus Salter, madam."
A dancer? I already have more dancers than I need. And usually my dancers come with a vocal or instrumental split talent. What use do I have for a dancer who can count?
N wasn't sure how to respond, especially as, truth be told, she wasn't much of a counter at all.
She's a gymnast as well, Levi added quickly. I heard there's a spot open for a new acrobat.
N struggled to contain her alarm. She hadn't bargained for that. She didn't know the first thing about gymnastics.
Is she now?
The younger asked, not looking at N so much as through her.
You may go, Levi. I'll speak to Miss Salta in private.
He blinked in surprise, then nodded. After giving N a final weary look, he slipped out the door. N tried not to let his apparent nervousness bother her. She had faced worse interviews for admission to her finishing school. Bianca beckoned her forward, and N moved to stand in front of one of the chairs before the Donna's desk.
"Do you plan on taking a seat, Miss Salter?" she asked.
"Not unless you ask me, madam." Bianca's green, lizard-like eyes inspected every foot, inch, and hair of N's body. Her lips curled, and N couldn't help but notice her uneven red lipstick.
"Sit."
Once N had taken a seat, Bianca asked,
"Where are you from?"
"Bellamy, madam."
"That's quite a journey. How long have you lived here?"
"About half a day, madam." That made Bianca smile. For a moment. N hadn't been trying to be humorous.
"Is Levi trying to court you? He serves a number of roles for me, and I require him to have a clear head. If his bell is living within St. Morse, it will distract him."
N would never walk out with a card dealer, not if she planned on keeping the last shreds of her reputation intact. And if the card dealer in question was Levi, she'd also need to salvage what remained of her dignity. Even if he was attractive, she had no patience for his jokes and smirking. "No, madam. Nothing like that."
"Then why is he so interested in your well-being?"
N uttered the first lie she could think of. "He owes a favor to my father."
"I should have guessed Levi would be in debt to a counter. How good are your counting abilities?"
N could barely add or subtract without the use of her fingers. "Quite good, madam."
"Are you literate?"
With each new question, Bianca leaned closer to N over her desk, almost close enough to grab her. "Yes, madam."
"How well can you read?"
"I read very well, madam," she answered, barely able to hide the bite in her voice.
"Who taught you?"
"I went to finishing school, the Bellamy Finishing School of Fine Arts."
"Did you really? They don't accept just anyone. You must be the only Salter in your class."
N kept her hands folded calmly in her lap, despite the fury shooting through her like an electric current. The Salters might have been the lowest and most common dancing family, but she wasn't ashamed of her name. It didn't matter that her talents didn't compare to her classmates. She'd worked for her place at that school, for her future.
"I was, madam."
Bianca was now bent so close to N that N could smell her musky perfume.
"And you must be quite intelligent to have passed the entrance exams."
It wasn't a question, so N stayed quiet.
"Is there anything else I should know about you, Miss Salter? Anything else that could be useful to me?"
"No, madam."
"Pity."
At last, Bianca leaned back in her seat and drummed her fingers against a stack of papers. Each of her rings, there were almost a dozen, shimmered. Unlike Raymond's, these appeared to contain real jewels.
"How old are you, Miss Salter? You must be at least 14 to work here, and I don't make exceptions."
N cringed inwardly. This interview had already been the best test of her etiquette skills she'd ever experienced, and it had been only a few minutes.
"I turned 17 in February, madam," she said.
"You look quite young." "Oh, he would like you," she murmured,
more to herself than to N. N didn't ask what or whom she meant.
"I'm glad to hear you have a background in gymnastics. Levi was quite right. We are looking for some acrobats."
If Levi's smile looked like a smirk, then Bianca's looked like a sneer.
But I think I've found an additional use for you, Bianca purred.
Anne nodded and pretended like she was following along, though the unsettling satisfaction on Bianca's face sent an uneasy feeling through her stomach. This interview was highly unlike any that she had experienced before.
This casino has been in my family for generations, Bianca told her. But New Rains isn't the city it was when St. Morse was first built. Have you ever heard of my family, Miss Salter?
No, madam.
So you don't know what kind of business we run?
Casino, madam? Bianca stood and turned her back to Anne, facing the Miser family portrait.
There are people in these halls who can unhinge your mind with a kiss, who can distill poisons and narcotics from a single flower falling from a bouquet, who deal in tricks, deceit, and even death. And they are all under my employ.
Sweat broke out along Anne's neck. Donna of the Augustine crime family, Levi had told her. This must have been what he meant. But what would that have to do with Anne? She was a simple performer. If Bianca truly had those kind of people within St. Morse, then what use could she have for her? Bianca turned to face her. Her green eyes looked nearly black.
Among my friends, I keep a few favorites who perform a little extra for me. There are enemies everywhere in this city, even within this casino, who seek to destroy me. I need to know their plans. I need listeners. And I can no longer afford to be short on ears.
Before Anne could process Bianca's words, the donna ushered Anne out of her seat and to the center of the room. She made a twirling gesture, and Anne, confused, obliged. Anne kept her shoulders back to make them appear larger, stronger, the right build for an acrobat. Whatever this was, it felt like a test.
You're young. No one ever notices the young, Bianca commented wistfully.
She grabbed Anne's cheeks and brought her face closer, then absent-mindedly ran a bony finger down Anne's cupid bow to her chin. Her fingers tasted foul, like rancid perfume. Anne resisted the urge to free herself from Bianca's grasp and ignored the sickening feeling in her stomach. She needed a job. She needed to survive in this city long enough to find Lords.
But you're a performer, Bianca continued, unaware or unbothered by Anne's unease. You can be noticed if you want. You're smart and can move in higher society, but you also know Levi, and I'm sure, if you ask nicely, he'd be willing to show you a thing or two about the streets. You've only just arrived. This city hasn't corrupted you yet.
She relaxed her grip on Anne's face, and Anne backed away, her cheeks sore.
And I could use a girl.
Whatever Levi had told her about Bianca Augustine, she hadn't been prepared for this. The way Bianca looked at her, touched her, like she was a possession. This meeting felt more like an appraisal than an interview. Under different circumstances, Anne would have fled the room and the Donna's frightful presence.
I'm going to do you a favor, Miss Salter. I'm going to give you this job.
Thank you,
But I need a favor in return. I need you to do another job for me.
I will find Lords, Anne recited, winding herself back up. I will find her and bring her home, no matter what it takes.
Of course, madam,
she responded swiftly, despite her nervousness.
I need you to deliver messages to my enemies. Can I trust you to do this for me?
Anne swallowed, staring into the woman's predatory gaze and vicious smile, and wondered who would be reckless or dangerous enough to make an enemy of someone like her. No matter what it takes.
Yes, madam. Hold out your hand, the younger instructed.
When Anne obeyed, she clasped both of her wrinkled hands around Anne's. She whispered something that Anne couldn't hear, and a cold tingling shot up Anne's arm. N gasped, but when she tried to yank her arm back, Bianca held in place. The tingling accumulated in N's chest, and her lungs shook and hardened, as if surrounded by a shell. No air would release. She couldn't breathe. Her balance swayed, but Bianca just gripped her hand tighter, her face unconcerned. Her nails dug deep into N's skin, and N choked for breath. Nothing. Nothing. There was no panic like the panic of suffocating, and she stared wildly at Bianca's apathetic green eyes, pleading for aid. Help, she mouthed, but no air came out. Just as her vision began to darken, the feeling released. Air rushed down her throat, and N coughed as her lungs stretched like cramped muscles. She collapsed on the floor, tears welled in her eyes.
That was my omerta, Bianca said, looming above her. It's not an oath I bestow often, but now you are mine.
N grasped for Lord's rules, for something to tell her how she should react, how she should behave, when confronted with the worst. Words to recite, words to wind herself back up. Don't let her see you squirm, Levi had said. Never show them your fear, Lords had warned. But the loudest word, the only word, was Bianca's. Mine, mine, mine. En stared at Bianca in horror. The woman had strangled her without touching her. Though En's lungs had returned to normal, a phantom soreness lingered, and panic still clawed up her throat. For several moments she'd thought she would really die, that Bianca would kill her in this dreadful office, while her secretary and Levi waited outside. She could have died. And no one had heard a thing. N felt small. She felt ill. What had Bianca done?
You may sit now, Bianca told her, the smile playing on her lips.
N sat down slowly, carefully, and she watched the old woman with growing alarm. She needed to run, to be alone, to bathe. She needed comfort, and there was none to be found in Bianca's domineering expression, in the stiffness of the desk chair, or the uncomfortable heat of the office. Bianca called it an omerta, but N had never heard of such a thing. What had she done to her? And Levi, had he known she could do this? Why hadn't he warned her?
Cedric Torin will be paying St. Morse a visit tonight, Bianca said, already returning to business. Your first assignment will be to bring a message to him in the Trops room at 10 o'clock.
The name sounded familiar for some reason, but N was too traumatized to place it, picking at a scab along her thumb to focus on anything other than the woman before her. By the way Bianca spoke the name, it sounded as if everyone should know him. The scab popped off, and blood trickled down her palm.
Look at me while I'm talking to you, Bianca snapped,
and N's head jolted toward Bianca of its own accord. N's heart thundered. This woman could control her like a puppet, force her own body to betray her. She was trapped within her own skin. What is the message, madam? She wasn't sure if she had spoken those words on her own, or if Bianca had made her. Bianca pulled a vial of clear liquid out of her drawer and handed it to her.
This is your message. See that he receives it. I'm tired of young Mr. Torin playing with my things.
Once again, Bianca leaned closer, and this time, N winced and put as much distance between the two of them as possible. She knew her terror must have been plain on her face.
This won't kill him, but it will incapacitate him for several days. That should send him a message, don't you agree?
Yes, madam. Hen's conscience twisted when she realized what she'd agreed to do, even if Cedric Torin was a stranger. Surely he didn't deserve to be poisoned, and she couldn't possibly be the one to do it. She was a schoolgirl, for goodness sake, not some kind of assassin. But Bianca's menacing glare rooted Hen to her seat. This was her chance to refuse, to run. But the more she considered it, the more air was sucked out of her. Her breath thinned until she was gasping again. Each inhale was weaker than the next. While Vianca thoughtfully twisted an emerald ring around her finger, N gripped the edges of her seat, her lungs aching as they demanded oxygen. Then Vianca's lips coiled into a smile, and N's chest expanded in relief. She took large, gulping breaths and blinked the tears away from her eyes. Somehow the Omerta knew what N was thinking. It knew N didn't want to do this, and it was playing with her, punishing her. This woman could murder her at any moment she wished. N bit her lip to hold back the helplessness squirming in her throat. Breathe. Cedric was a stranger, someone who meant nothing to her. Breathe. This wasn't permanent. She was leaving this monstrous city the moment she found Lords.
"We've come to an agreement, then," Vianca said. Clearly, N's silence was what she'd wanted to hear. "The acrobats are in the middle of a show. Tonight is their last performance, so you can begin rehearsing a new act with them tomorrow. I'll be sure to send you something special to wear tonight for your date with Mr. Torren. Time to abandon your Bellamy values."
N didn't need to worry about the city corrupting her. Vianca Augustine seemed confident in achieving that all on her own. Vianca retrieved a bronze key out from a filing cabinet.
"As part of your newfound employment, you will live here in St. Maur's. Your apartment, room 1812.
She handed the key to N, and N mumbled a thank you, sliding it into her pocket beside the vial and her token.
"Welcome to the greatest casino in New Rains, Miss Salter."
N stood so fast her knees cracked. She needed to get out of here, get away from her. She needed to get out of the city. This had all been a terrible mistake.
"I'll contact you again when I have a new task for you," Vianca promised, her eyes flinty. "Or if you disappoint."
The threat in her words was clear. As N stumbled on her near run to the door, Vianca didn't even look at her. She returned to her papers, no smile, no nod. Not even enough acknowledgement to call it indifference. And that was what terrified N most of all. Levi stood in the waiting room, repeatedly checking his watch. He looked up as N closed the door.
"Well?"
he asked impatiently. N hesitated a few moments, waiting for Levi to add something else, anything else. Had he known this would happen? Surely he wouldn't have brought her here if he knew about the Omerta. He would have warned her. He wouldn't have let her anywhere near St. Maur's Casino. She'd only just met Levi, but criminal or not, she had heard true sincerity in his voice when he promised to help her. Unless everything in this city was a lie. She opened her mouth to tell him the truth, but her chest constricted. It was a simple word, Omerta. But when she tried to form it, no sound would come out. N realized that, whatever Vianca had done to her, N couldn't talk about it, so she smiled to hide her panic, as she had always been taught to do. Wasn't that one of Lord's sayings about being a lady? Smile widest when you are about to cry? N had already broken rule after rule, and she needed this one. She needed to do something right. She needed to feel in control. More than anything, she needed to be alone.
"I got the job,"
N managed, though she didn't sound excited. Everything felt numb. Tonight she was going to...
"You got the job?"
Levi echoed, and N hated that he looked impressed, hated that she'd wanted that minutes ago, when now she felt so shaken.
"I'll walk you to your new room, then."
He opened the door to the hallway, and N avoided staring at the miser portraits, suddenly all too aware that these faces belonged to the dead. When she stared into their purple eyes, she felt Vianca's green ones gazing back. "How kind of you," she muttered, wishing he would instead leave her to herself. As intent as she was on finding her mother, she didn't know if she could do anything else today, with all the questions and stress of this morning and tonight's assignment weighing on her shoulders.
"Ever the gentleman,"
he said cheerily as they stepped inside the elevator. The pulleys above them spun, and the platform jerked as they ascended. N held the railing in a steel grip.
"What did you say that impressed Vianca so much?"
Levi asked. Everything about his tone was pleasant and friendly. It made her want to scream.
She appreciated my etiquette skills, En snapped.
That was another broken rule. She couldn't pinpoint which one. Not in this death trap. Not with the curse Vianca had cast on her. Not when she kept picturing lords in a similar metal cage. Only one that was descending and descending, never to reach a bottom. She was still smiling, though. Her teachers would have been proud.
Ah, there's that attitude again, Levi said.
Are you quite finished?
For some reason, that made him smile. He didn't hear the panic in her voice. Didn't realize he'd just introduced her to a monster.
Why do I have the feeling I need to watch out for you? He asked.
Goodness, he's exhausting. I'm not helpless, you know.
That's not what I meant. I meant that maybe I should watch out for you, because you seem like the kind of person someone might underestimate.
En blinked in surprise.
What gave you such an idea?
I don't spend my mornings helping out just any pretty missy, you know.
Was Levi Glazier flirting with her? The boys in Bellamy never flirted with her, unless they hoped she'd introduce them to her richer classmates. Few people paid attention to someone as common as a Celta. He must have been making fun of her again. She was emotionally wrung dry, and she didn't have the patience to watch Levi fling one smirk after another. He'd sat unaware, while in the next room, the Junker had assaulted En in the most terrifying way. He'd mocked her at every opportunity. He might have been helping her find lords, but only because En would pay him that night.
I'm flattered, she sneered, her voice vicious. Truly.
He stiffened, wilted.
Excellent, he said dryly. Wouldn't want to get off on the wrong foot with a new co-worker.
The word co-worker sounded stranger the more En let it sink in. Her teachers, and probably lords for that matter, never would have let her within 50 feet of a casino, and probably not within 100 feet of Levi and the collection of lost things in his closet. But the lords En knew, and the lords Levi remembered, seemed to be completely different people. To think that lords spent so much time in this wretched city boggled En, disturbed her even. Maybe lords knew how to survive in new reigns. Maybe the reason lords never told her the truth was in case En might have been foolish enough to believe that she could survive here too. Her mother had been right to keep her daughter in the dark, because each hour spent in new reigns formed a new crack, and there was no way En was going to emerge from this city unbroken. Levi. Levi's poker face didn't waver as he steadied his hand, a four card straight, and the kings of clubs and spades. Clearly luck was on his side. The player to his left eyed him warily and threw in 5 green chips. 250 volts. From beside him, Cedric Torin also slapped 5 green ones in the pot. Levi equaled their wagers on behalf of the house. Normally, with the betting so high, he'd fold. But tonight was different. He hadn't expected Cedric Torin himself to visit St. Morse. He could have been there for only one reason, and that was Levi. Which meant that Levi couldn't afford to look weak, not even for a moment. When the hand ended, Levi had managed to earn a 27% profit. At this rate, he'd have 30 in the next hour, which was the highest he'd ever made in one shift. Unlike poker or blackjack, where the dealer was little more than a moderator in the game, Trops treated the dealer like a player who represented the house. The game placed a heavy emphasis on strategy and bluffing, and it was so well known across the city that the main street of the casino district was named after it. Dealers like Levi were famous for their skill, and Levi was one of the best of them all. The other players grumbled and stomped their way to the next table, their pockets significantly lighter. Levi took a break to collect the cards, as well as his bearings. The only player who didn't leave was Cedric Torin.
Low pup, he murmured.
His brown hair was slicked to the side and shiny with grease, and his smile was wolf-like. He switched to the seat beside Levi.
Cedric, Levi gritted, concealing the ugly feeling of dread in his stomach.
The Trops room around them was loud with jazz and the chatter of guests, all gussied up in designer gowns, and carrying cigarettes in long, jewel-encrusted holders. Surely Cedric wouldn't try anything in public. Even the Don of the Torin family wouldn't do something that reckless.
What can I do for you?
Cedric turned to one of the waiters carrying a tray of champagne.
Two glasses.
He set one in front of Levi, who didn't bother to reach for it. Drinking with the Torin, least of all the Don, sounded like asking for trouble, and Levi needed all his concentration to survive this encounter unscathed.
Should we make a toast? Cedric suggested. To what?
Levi asked, keeping his voice steady as he shuffled the chopsticks. Cedric Torin had a reputation for playing with his prey before he killed it, and Levi needed to make it clear to Cedric that he wasn't afraid. As far as Cedric should have been concerned, Levi had no reason to fear his family. If anything, this should be an exchange between two businessmen, a celebration of an advantageous trade. Cedric raised his glass.
We toast to your continued good health. You've managed to push back the date for our investment return not just once or twice, but three times.
Levi's skin went clammy. This was no celebration. This was a threat.
Cheers, pup.
Cedric clinked Levi's glass before taking a swig.
So, where are my promised returns?
Levi swallowed.
They're coming.
Cedric leaned closer. He had a sickly sweet smell to him, like toffee.
I'm not a sickhead, you know, Cedric said. Just tell me what you've really been doing this whole time. He suspects, Levi thought with panic. Or he knows, and he's forcing me to lie.
The truth meant death.
You'll get the vault soon, Levi rasped, shifting away from him.
Cedric laughed, then adjusted his suit jacket. A silver knife gleamed from an inside pocket, a ruby winking at Levi from its hilt. Only a Torin would carry a weapon that flashy. Levi reminded himself that he couldn't look vulnerable. He searched around the Trops room for some of Cedric's cronies, and sure enough, he spotted several men lurking near the door, in crisp suits with black and red striped ties. Lackluster colors. He fought to maintain his poker face. He was surrounded.
You're gonna kill me in St. Morse, Levi dared,
mustering up the appearance of confidence.
Doesn't seem you'd get your vaults back then, and Vianca would never forgive you. I'm not here to kill you. I'm here to warn you.
But despite his words, Cedric removed the knife from his jacket. With only an arm's length of space between them, it would take Cedric only a heartbeat to stab the knife through Levi's neck. Any rational man would run, but Levi was frozen. Maybe that was a good thing. It made him appear bold, even when he was terrified. Cedric ran his finger along the blade, then inspected the red droplet on his fingertip, as if assuring Levi the knife was sharp. He licked away the blood. The sight of it made Levi shudder.
Whatever scheme you've been running, Cedric murmured. It's over. Maybe you will be too.
Cedric flipped over the top card on the deck.
10 of hearts. You got lucky, pup. We'll give you 10 days. With reminders.
He stood, slid his knife back into its sheath and drained the rest of his glass.
A present from my family.
He tossed a silver card face down in front of Levi. Cedric whistled and walked to a different table. Levi's heart hammered, both from Cedric's threat and the gift he left behind. He recognized the card instantly. Its metallic back was signature to the Shadow Game, the rumored execution game of the Phoenix Club. It was a Northside legend, as notorious as the Great Street War or the original Lords. To Levi, it was an object plucked out from a story, from a nightmare.
It can't be real, Levi thought, hoped.
But even his cynicism couldn't rationalize away the card's plain existence right in front of him. The tales claimed the cards had magical properties once you touched them. Even though Levi didn't believe in those shat superstitions like Jack did, he flipped it over with a morbid curiosity, seeking some assurance that the legends weren't true.
The moment he touched it, the lights of the Trops room faded, and silence pierced through the music. Levi stared down a long hallway that stretched endlessly in both directions. The impressively tall doors alternated black and white, each parallel to the other. The walls and ceiling were marble, clean enough to glint off the hallway's collection of mirrors and crystal. The floor was tiled in black and white as well, like a chessboard. Vaguely, he got the sense he was dreaming, but if he was, he couldn't seem to wake up. He reached for a black door, but it was locked. He tried the white one next to it, and it clicked open. The air that rushed past felt like a sigh against his skin. Once he crossed the threshold, he found himself dressed in a smart suit, far nicer than his St. Morse uniform. The mud squished beneath his oxfords, and it smelled of earth. He was in a graveyard. The sky was grey, as the sky in New Rains tended to be. The City of Sin followed him wherever he went, even in his dreams. Levi moved to return to the hallway. Graveyards unnerved him, as cliché as that was, and tripped over one of the headstones. It was painted metallic silver. "Levi Cain's Glazier," it read. Levi scampered to his feet and backed around it. On its other side was a face. The Fool, one of the shadow cards, the invitation to the shadow game. The bells on the Fool's hat chimed, high-pitched and eerie in the silent graveyard. The diamonds and triangles painted on his face spun like pinwheels, and he strutted toward the cliff in front of him. Levi reflexively took a step back, as though he could also fall. The Fool laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. "It's not real," Levi assured himself. "It's only a nightmare." But it didn't feel like one. The earth sticky under his shoes, the cold sweat dripping down his neck, the Fool winking from his headstone. How could this all be in his head? He whipped around and faced a new row of fresh, unfilled graves. He peered into the first hole, above which the headstone said, "Jack Dorner Mardlin." Jack's coffin was lidless. Soot coated his blonde hair and cap, and his eyes were wide open, his mouth twisted into an unnatural scream. Levi jolted back with horror and nearly stumbled into the next grave. It was Chess's, and beside him Muncie's and dozens of other irons from around the city. Levi bit back a wave of nausea looking at Muncie's grey-toned skin and lifeless eyes, matching the bodies of the other kids around her. Even if the investment scheme had gotten in the way of most of Levi's responsibilities as lord, he still cared. They were his kids, his to protect. This was all Levi's fault. He ran back to the hallway. The moment he crossed the threshold, his shoulders relaxed, his guilt and fear fading along with the nightmare. There were hundreds of doors, but none of them was the right one. Suddenly, a white door blasted open. Fire spewed out, reaching into the hallway, reaching for him. Levi raced out of its path, his back pressed against one of the black doors, the heat licking his cheek. Ghost-like faces flickered within the flames, their eyes an eerie, glowing purple, watching him. All at once, they screamed. Levi gasped and woke in the Trops room at the St. Morse. His suit and vest were wet from his spilled glass of champagne. A few people at neighboring tables pointed at him as he dried off his pants with a handkerchief, his fingers trembling. "A dream," he told himself, shaking his head to clear it. "A nightmare." But he could still hear the Fool's laugh. He could still picture Jack's contorted scream. On the face of the shadow card, a metal tower stretched toward the night sky, disappearing amid clouds and stars. Several men climbed its spiral staircase, and one fell from it to the ice below. The tower. In the shadow game, it represented chaos and ruin. He shoved it in his pocket as nausea stormed in his stomach. The Phoenix Club's private execution game was a myth, and Levi had always taken the North Side's legends with a grain of salt. There was no house of horrors hidden within the city. There was no wandering devil bargaining for your soul. And there was no game you couldn't win. But there could be no mistake. The game did exist.
The card and the visions proved it. Have you ever considered that you might be in over your head? The white boot captain had asked him this morning, and the words made Levi sick. He'd always known Vianca's scheme was dangerous, but he was the Iron Lord. He was cunning. He was clever. If he didn't collect Cedric's vaults in time, he was dead. Levi's break ended, and a new group of players sat down. Every card he drew was lousy, a single queen and the lowest of every other suit. The house's pile of chips shrank, and his profit slumped to 20%. A man in a bowler hat took his eighth pot. Levi tried to focus on his game to see if he was counting cards, but he was panicked, he was sloppy, and his mind kept straying back to Cedric Torrin. If the Torrin family wanted him dead, why would they use the shadow game instead of one of their own men? Cedric's cousins, the brutal, notorious siblings Charles and Delia, never turned down an opportunity to kill. Levi had heard rumors that Charles was experimenting to see how many times he could shoot someone before they bled out, and that Delia had a knife collection made from the bones of each of her victims. If Cedric wanted Levi dead, he didn't need the shadow game to do it. Which meant Cedric was showing off his friendship with the Phoenix Club. Cedric had inherited his position as Don less than a year ago, after his father's death. Since then, in an effort to squash his rival, Vianca Augustine, he'd befriended the Wigheads, begun a campaign for office, and declared himself an honorary Southsider. He would make a spectacle of Levi, just to show he could. After another round, the players headed to the poker and roulette tables. Levi's profits plummeted to a meager 18%, a good percentage for a mediocre player. Not for him. Even if he played his best at St. Morse, 10 days wasn't enough time to come up with 10,000 volts. He traced his finger along the edge of the shadow card in his pocket. In the stories, receiving one meant only one thing. A warning. Make the Phoenix Club happy, or go buy a cemetery plot. Lords Alfero has to be alive, he thought. Because if she's not... 10 days. 10 days to figure out how to beat his enemies at their own game. N. N found a mention of Cedric Torrin in her guidebook, buried within a chapter called A History of Organized Crime on the North Side. He was the Don of the Torrin family. He owned a narcotics and gambling empire. He was one of the most powerful men in New Reigns. And N was going to poison him. A knock at her door summoned her from her bed. She'd fallen asleep, but she hadn't truly rested. In her dream, she was running through the city's streets, reaching for her mother's slender shadow as it disappeared down alley after alley. She'd been paying too much attention to the diminishing sound of Lord's footsteps to notice the second shadow lurking behind her. It tore the jacket from N's arms and ripped the purse out of her hands. She'd woken just before it had plunged a knife into her back. N opened the door. A woman stood in the hallway with a grim expression, holding a dress. "From Madame Augustine," she said. N's hand shook as she took it and held it up to her small frame. It was pink as peonies, with a crescent moon collar and a ribbon tied around the waist. Its skirt a mess of tulle and bows. It was a dress meant for a doll. "What is this for?" N asked. "For tonight," the woman answered, already turning to leave. "She can't be serious. It's non-negotiable." N had always enjoyed dressing up, especially for a performance. In a way, the outfit reminded her of a ballet costume. So as she slipped it on, she'd tried to convince herself she was preparing for an elaborate show, rather than her potential demise. Her makeup calmed her, even if her hands were shaking. Some powder around her nose, some rouge on her cheeks, some tint on her lips. Whatever it took to persuade her that she was another person, that this was not her life, this was not her end. She repeated Lord's rules to herself in the mirror. Do not reveal your emotions, especially your fear. Never allow yourself to be lost. Trust is a last resort. The words didn't mean much now. After all, those rules couldn't save her. She tucked the clear vial into her pocket, and on her way out the door, left 1,000 volts in an orb for Levi on her table.
nearly everything she had, in case he came looking when she didn't return. She'd never felt so alone. If St. Maur's were a palace, then the Trops room was the throne room, and greed was king. The stained glass windows, the iron candelabras, the glimmering marble floors and white tables. The room was decorated as though for royalty. The throne itself was in the center of the room, raised above the rest of the floor. There Levi sat, collecting and shuffling a deck of midnight blue cards. He was speaking to a man with slicked brown hair, fair skin, and an expensive suit. Of course Levi was at the throne. Raymond had said he was Bianca's favorite. Levi wore a three-piece blue suit and a green tie that matched St. Maur's signature colors. For a brief moment, Anne allowed herself to see what the other girls and boys had seen, the girls and boys whose clothing now filled half of Levi's wardrobe. He cleaned up nicely, and Anne had a soft spot for men in suits. She appreciated the way the jacket made him look broader, and the way his dark suit and features contrasted with the copper roots in his hair. She stopped herself. She needed to focus. Levi watched the man next to him while shuffling a deck of cards. He half smiled, then he adjusted his tie, the muscles in his jaw clenching as he... Focus. What would her teachers have said? Levi was hardly someone to admire. And even if his appearance was nice, his character left quite a lot to be desired. She didn't feel like herself, not in this dress, not with the vial in her pocket, not so far from home. More problematic than Levi's dashing appearance was the fact he was so prominently seated above everyone else in the room. She would be easy to spot, looking like a walking piece of cotton candy. But Bianca had claimed Cedric would be here, in the Trops room. Thankfully, Levi wasn't directly facing her. Maybe he wouldn't see her at all. He did look rather preoccupied with the man beside him. If only she was wearing something less conspicuous. She was small enough that, with some luck, she could have slipped the poison into Cedric's glass from behind him, and he'd have been none the wiser. But the dress made this impossible. Anne had spent her entire life being overlooked, but tonight, Bianca had dressed her to be noticed. A man in a green St. Maur's uniform stood by the door, the pallor of his face nearly matching the white busts lining Bianca's hallways. "Excuse me," Anne asked.
"What can I do for you, miss?"
"I'm looking for Cedric Torren. He promised to meet me here." The gravity of the evening felt much more real now that she'd spoken his name out loud.
"He's there."
The employee pointed to Levi's table. Just as he did, the man with the slicked hair drained his glass and strode away with a swagger to his step. Anne paled. What was Cedric doing talking to Levi?
"He just left."
"Thank you."
"Miss,"
the employee called, his voice heavy and weary. Anne turned around.
"Yes?"
"Are you, here alone?"
"This dress," Anne grumbled internally. "As if I don't look young enough already." Seeing her annoyed expression, the man looked down at the floor, flustered.
"Never mind. Please, forget I said anything."
Anne took a deep breath and repeated Lord's rules to herself. She followed Cedric to another card table, and before she could talk herself out of it, slid into the chair beside him. It was conveniently behind Levi, so he wouldn't spot her unless he turned around. She almost wished he would. Maybe he could help her. Maybe he could save her. But the omerta was a secret. She hadn't been able to tell Levi before, and even if she found a loophole, the memory of suffocating made her stomach turn. She couldn't risk that again, even if it meant acting alone. She didn't look at Cedric for several moments. Her heart pounded. He was the don of a casino family, just like Bianca. And if he was anything like her, then Anne was right to be afraid. She should be petrified. She should run. But that wasn't an option. She might need to poison him for Bianca, but she would survive this night for Lords. At last, she turned to him. He was already smiling at her. He was attractive. Not in a beautiful or even a handsome way, but in how he carried himself, as if he had power over everyone, and he knew how to use it. But the more En stared at him, the more she noticed the heavy grease in his hair and the outrageous, gaudy details of his suit, as if anyone really needed a diamond-studded necktie. Yet, as attractive as he was, it wasn't a good-looking smile. It was threatening, like a wolf who had just spotted his prey.
"I don't believe we've met," he said smoothly.
His age was difficult to discern. His receding hairline didn't match the few lines on his face. She guessed about 30 years old.
"Are your parents here?"
"What? No, no," she said, her voice distressed. She was breaking the first rule. He could see her fear. She needed to do better than that if she was going to live through the night. A knife winked at her from his pocket. She almost whimpered.
"And are you a fan of Trops, miss?"
Cedric asked. She didn't have any chips. She didn't know how to play. Her lie was unraveling before she could even spin it. "Forget you noticed me," she pleaded. She wanted to go home. She wanted to be invisible again, so long as she was safe. But she was trapped under Cedric's snare of a smile and the other players' bewildered looks. She was in the spotlight. For once, she had people's attention. So she did the only thing she knew. She smiled innocently and lied. "Yes, I play all the time." She could tell from his expression that he didn't believe her. But there was no suspicion in his eyes, only amusement. She was simply a silly girl to him. She relaxed, barely. Young, innocent, she could keep up that charade. She was a Bellamy schoolgirl lost in the City of Sin. She knew this role well. Cedric slid her a stack of 10 green chips.
"Compliments to a pretty young lady."
"Thank you." She placed one of the chips in the center, and the dealer handed her 3 cards. She mimicked how the other players held them, and moved some cards around here and there for good measure. Each round, the players placed their bets, and the dealer passed them a new card. This continued for a few turns, until each of them was asked to reveal 3 cards from their hand. N flipped over the Ace of Spades, then the Queen and 10 of Hearts. The others watched with raised eyebrows. Perhaps she'd made the wrong move. One of the players folded, and so did she. With 4 chips left, she waited for the game to finish. The hairs on her neck rose on end. She felt the heated gazes of the whole table. She looked obviously lost. If this continued, Cedric might grow suspicious. When the game finally ended and the dealer collected the pot of chips, Cedric turned to her.
"I take it you're not a regular. Are you sure you've played before?"
"Was I that obvious?" she asked, trying to appear sheepish. She wiped her sweaty hands on her tulle skirt. He smirked at her as if, yes, she was.
"Waiting on someone. You can't be here by yourself."
"I'm here alone," she replied cautiously. "I thought I'd watch the dancers."
"Then you're a little lost. The theater is across the hall."
He scanned her up and down, and she resisted the urge to look away from his dark eyes. She was supposedly playing the role of the assailant, yet his gaze was the one growing more and more predatory. Her skin prickled with unease.
"Would you like me to accompany you? I wouldn't want you to get lost again."
"That would be lovely."
"Cedric."
"Cedric," she echoed nervously.
"And your name, miss?"
He took her arm and led her around the tables. She peeked at Levi, who was, thankfully, still too focused on his game to notice her.
Emma. It's Emma."
"A pleasure, Emma."
In the lobby, the air reeked of floral perfumes, cigarette smoke, and the perpetual stink of Trop Street. Groups in ruffled gowns and tuxedos shuffled between the restaurant and the casino rooms, but they all parted for Cedric as he approached. En couldn't tell if it was out of respect or fear. In New Reigns, they both seemed like the same thing. She tried to avoid their wary gazes in her direction, to keep herself from trembling.
"The performance doesn't start for a half hour," Cedric said. "Do you like dancing as much as you like watching it?"
In order to poison him, she'd need to stay with him until he bought himself a drink. But the way he held her, his arm linked so tightly with her own, her side pressed against him, she felt the urge to flee. It was nothing he had said, but the way he looked at her, it made her feel wrong. "I love dancing, but only if I have a good partner," she said, swallowing down her longing for escape. She had lasted this long. She could do this. She had to. He smiled. His teeth were alabaster white.
"I promise you will find me more than acceptable."
He steered her to the dance floor of a grand ballroom of twinkling lights and waxy floors. The other couples danced chest to chest, and Cedric pulled her close. His breath warmed her forehead, and she wished she was tall enough to look him in the eyes, or at least anywhere above his neck. She did her best to follow his steps. They didn't have this dance in Bellamy. Left, right, right, turn, a left kick, repeat. She caught on quickly, and he smiled as she accidentally turned tighter than intended and pressed her back into his chest. His cologne smelled sweet, like toffee. He raised his eyebrows.
"You didn't tell me you have a dancing talent."
"You never asked."
"Are you a tanzer? A glissé?"
Those were the names of wealthy dancing families at her school. N had attempted to compete with them her whole life, even when her toes blistered and her muscles ached. She knew his words were flattery. Celters and tanzers were simply incomparable, no matter how hard she practiced. But the compliment still sent a thrill through her chest. "A salter," she corrected him.
"There's no need to keep secrets from me."
Left, right, right, turn.
"You're too graceful for a salter. You're a rarer form of dancer. Oh, your parents must spoil you with lessons."
Her annoyance peaked. "My name is Salter."
"I'm sorry,"
he amended quickly, but he looked more amused than apologetic.
"I meant no offense."
The song ended on a low minor chord, saving N from responding. He took her arm and led her to a near-empty side of the room, to a lone velvet love seat in a shadowy alcove. It felt awfully private here, so far from the other dancers. N felt a prickle of unease. What exactly was he considering?
"Why here?"
she asked.
"Away from prying eyes. I'm determined to learn more about you, Emma Salter. I don't usually meet girls your age quite so..."
"Quite so what?"
"Confident."
He gave her that snare of a smile.
"You must give your teachers a lot of trouble."
He truly thought her to be young, treating her as though she weren't old enough to be a teenager. As he leaned forward, the way his gaze roamed over her delicate hands and her small chest, she realized with horror why the dress was non-negotiable. And she felt ill. She couldn't decide who was more of a monster, Cedric or Bianca. "Oh, he would like you," she'd said. This was the part Bianca had designed for her to play. She wanted to leave him in disgust, but then she felt the omerta squeezing her lungs, coercing her forward, trapping her. She had no choice but to continue the act. "My teachers love me." She played along, feeling vile inside and out.
"Of course they do."
Cedric snapped his fingers at a footman.
"Two glasses of your house's finest wine."
Her heart lifted for a moment. A drink meant the opportunity to poison him and be done with this despicable man, something she was feeling less guilty about by the minute.
"Once he returns, we can make our way to the theater."
"I didn't realize you were so interested in dancing," Anne replied with an attempt at a girlish smile.
"I don't mind dancing, but I'm more interested in sitting beside you. A person's first show at St. Morse is always a treat."
"But..." He smiled, a hint of arrogance in his expression.
"I'd love to show you Luckluster. Our shows are spectacular."
"What do you mean, our shows?"
she asked, as though she didn't know he also owned a casino. "Do you run them?"
"Not exactly," he answered. "Your parents wouldn't mind me showing you, would they?"
"No, they wouldn't."
She attempted to feign excitement to hide her revulsion. No, perhaps it wouldn't be so terrible to poison him. The footman returned with two glasses of red wine. She'd never had it. Alcohol was illegal.